Hey, welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Football Podcast. This is Jordan. I'm joined by John again. How are you doing today, John?
Oh, I'm doing awesome. College football starts in less than 48 hours, and the NFL kickoff is, I believe, 9 days away.
Oh, man, that's exciting. So, yeah, I need to hurry up and get one of those college football leagues you were telling me about on Fantrax. To talk about those a little bit, because I think there's a lot of people out there that, you know, that don't have, or at least are like me and haven't played college football fantasy in the past, and I think it'd be a good way to, you know, help people expand their knowledge. So just kind of talk about those leagues just a little bit before we get into what we're talking about today.
Absolutely. So I've been playing NFL for 28 years, and I obviously love the college draft and all of that. And one Saturday afternoon, I was bored in an August about 8 summers ago, and I saw online that there was a college season-long fantasy football. And I'm like, hey, what do I got to lose? You know, I like college football. And I joined it, and I'm telling you, it is addictive. It is amazing. And without a doubt, my fantasy and draft knowledge have quadrupled since I've been playing college fantasy football. It made me with a laser-like focus on the prospects. I learned all of the different conferences. I learned the differences in defenses, and I learned more, instead of looking at production, to look at traits, because there are obviously players at the non-Power 5 conferences who are successful in the NFL, but how can you find them? And I'll always say there are two players that absolutely changed my opinion, that opened my eyes to how I can be an analyst and a draft kind of diehard. One is LeSean McCoy. I had him at the University of Pittsburgh on my fantasy team at the time the Panthers were in the Big East. And I saw him play, and I saw the NFL traits, the feet, the hands, the toughness, the ability to run between the tackles. And I was shocked when McCoy fell so far in the draft. I thought that was a great draft pick by Andy Reid and the Eagles. And I scoffed him up in all my leagues that year as a freshman. He was a great player in college. And the other one was Tim Tebow. I had had Tim Tebow on my college teams. I had him the year he won the Heisman. I had him as a junior. He helped me win college football fantasy championships. I probably had Tebow. I saw him play at the University of Florida at least 20 times. And beyond a doubt, I felt he could not play in the NFL. I was shocked that some people had him so highly ranked. As a Bronco fan, I did not think that was a smart pick. Now, while he had that magical run where they were 8-8 under John Fox and they went to the playoffs, anyone who saw him play knew that there was just something different about how the Broncos were winning those football games, and it was not because of Tebow. And obviously John Elway came in, he got rid of Tebow, brought in Peyton Manning, and the rest is history. But if you want to learn about college prospects and you want to be an expert in all of these kids coming into the NFL, college fantasy football, play all 28 teams. Do it on Fantrax. They have an amazing site. And just jump in and learn the game like I did. It's awesome, Jordan.
Yeah, it's my day off today, so I think I'm probably going to hop on there and draft up a team later this evening if I can. Should be pretty exciting. I think we kind of talked about maybe doing like a college show next week just to kind of do a little bit of fantasy talk there when we, you know, they have a couple games under our belt to talk about. But for today, we're going to switch gears from what we've been doing, and we're going to talk about Dynasty and Keeper Leagues a little bit. You know, talk about, you know, some younger players that have some, you know, a little bit more potential and, you know, leagues that extend past just this season. We're going to go kind of position by position, and we have a couple of storylines we've kind of been following. And so we're going to start with the quarterback position. And we've mentioned him a little bit before, but he had another really solid showing in week two, and that's Dak Prescott. And, I mean, I guess the question we just really have is, you know, is Dak Prescott the quarterback of the future for Dallas? I mean, you've seen Jerry come out and say publicly that, you know, he has, as of now, he's halted the search for the veteran, for like a veteran quarterback backup because, you know, he's been so impressed with how Prescott's played through 2 weeks. You know, his quarterback rating in the first 2 weeks has been 154 and 158, so you really can't get much better than that. He's shown NFL poise, you know, in the pocket. He's shown, you know, great patience, you know, letting the play develop and then tucking it and running for, you know, a touchdown. So I guess, yeah, that's the question. Is he the future for Dallas, or where are you at on him? I know you were high on him coming into the draft.
I absolutely believe that Dak Prescott is going to be the Cowboys' starting quarterback, if definitely in 3 years, if not next year, depending on the health of Romo throughout this season and how the Cowboys conclude the year. If you're a Dallas fan, you hope it is in the playoffs. I was high on Dak Prescott in the pre-draft process. I think the Cowboys got a steal on him in the fourth round. I was never a believer in Christian Hackenberg. I was absolutely shocked that the Jets personnel department took Hackenberg. I think that was a major whiff. I never saw NFL skill traits in Hackenberg. To me, Dak Prescott is an NFL quarterback. Yes, he has learning. I understand that. Yes, he's played vanilla defenses. I understand that. But we're talking about a kid who's miles ahead of Jared Goff at this point. Jared Goff can't even call the signals in the huddle right now. Now, I still believe in Goff. He'll be a player in the NFL. But he definitely has a much bigger learning curve than I expected. Prescott is leading the Cowboys in two preseason games. He has shown me the ability to play on an NFL field from a skill set. I love him. I was taking him in mock dynasty drafts in round 5. No one seemed to be on him. Now he's the buzz of the Twitterverse. And what I like most about Dak Prescott, that offensive line, they are young, they are nasty, and they are talented. I doubt he'll get beat up like Ryan Tannehill. I doubt he'll get beat up like David Carr did years ago with the Texans, Tim Couch with the Browns. If that line protects him, Dak Prescott will be a very successful NFL quarterback.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. You know, as a Dallas fan, he's been everything we hoped he would be, and you know, and then obviously way, way more on top of that. I do agree that, you know, he probably shouldn't start this year, but I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, like you mentioned, the injury, if, you know, Romo can't stay healthy and suffers another injury, he could be starting as soon as next year if Dallas, you know, has another bad year, you know, time to rebuild with, you know, Dak and Zeke. So, you know, talking about, you know, he's probably not going to start, but a guy that the news coming out of Denver is he might start. That's Trevor Siemian, or Siemian. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right.
I believe it's Siemian.
Siemian, okay. So is Trevor Siemian, is he going to start for Denver? And if so, what does that mean for Paxton Lynch?
Now, this is very interesting because I'm actually surprised at how little criticism John Elway has received in this offseason for what he's done at the quarterback position. Now, I know it's because he won a Super Bowl and he's an icon in Denver. And I'm not going to tell you he isn't a great personnel man or a GM, because he's obviously proven that he is. But I am shocked at the risk that he has taken for this Denver franchise. I have looked at Siemian. I went all the way back to his years at Northwestern. I have watched the little bit of tape that I could find of him. There is not a lot. He was not overly productive at Northwestern, and he wasn't a highly ranked prospect. Now, I believe in Kubiak, and he knows what he's doing, and he can coach people up. But I don't think Simeon's the answer here. And anyone who's seen Mark Sanchez play, he's clearly not the long-term answer. So what does that mean? That means that you're really looking at a Paxton Lynch. Now, I went through my notes, and I examined Paxton Lynch in detail. I think he has some holes in his game, and I don't think he's ready for the rigor of the NFL level. And I definitely don't think he's ready for the challenge of leading a Super Bowl team back to the AFC Championship game. I think he's too young. His raw skills are not there. And the ability to endure the psychological competitiveness of the league is not there. But I think Lynch is going to have at least 6 to 8 starts under his belt by the end of this season. I have a feeling right now Siemian is going to open the year as the starter. We're going to find out a lot in the third preseason game that Denver plays. This is very important. I'm not interested in Siemian in a dynasty league. I think he has zero value, basically, in a redraft 2-quarterback league. If you're desperate for a backup, maybe Siemian or Sanchez deserves a roster spot. But I do think Lynch by next year will be ready. So there is value in Lynch as a dynasty quarterback. I'm just afraid that they're going to throw him to the fire too quickly. But the good news is he might only throw the ball 22 times a game. They're going to run the ball a lot. They're going to play defense, and they're going to play field position. So we won't be asked to win games, which I think is the best thing for Paxton Lynch.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I kind of liken Simeon to a guy like Case Keenum that probably could start the year as the starting quarterback, but he's not going to hold on to that job. Definitely not in the next year, possibly not even this entire season. I agree with you there. So, you know, talking about some other guys that, you know, we might have to wait to see a little bit, you know, the number one and number two guys in the draft this year. When are we going to get to see Jared Goff and Carson Wentz?
Now, I've been very disappointed in Jared Goff. I had him as my number one ranked quarterback coming out of the draft process.
Yeah, I thought he was going to be a lot better.
Me too. Now, obviously, the one thing we don't see on film, and having not really had the personal interviews from a quarterback position, but I thought he was impressive with John Gruden on the quarterback camp. So I thought he had the intellectual abilities at least to handle a scaled down offensive game plan. So I'm shocked by this. You have to allow Case Keenum to take control of the offense at least for the first half of the year. Obviously, you're going to run the football and allow that defense to win football games for you. In the best case scenario for Jeff Fisher, Goff remains on the sideline now, I'm convinced, the whole season. You end up at 9-7. Case Keenum is good enough to throw 18 touchdowns and put points on the board. You try to let Jared Goff learn the mental game of the NFL and get accustomed to the speed of the game. So I'm hoping he remains on the bench and the sideline his whole rookie season, just like Carson Palmer, Steve McNair, and other quarterbacks who needed that time. Now, Wentz. I was never a believer that Wentz could step in and lead the Eagles immediately. Also, coming from North Dakota State and the level of competition that he faced and the speed of the NFL game, I do not believe that Carson Wentz is ready to lead an NFL football team. And I think for him, the Eagles have Sam Bradford, and the Eagles acquire Chase Daniels in the offseason from the Chiefs, who knows Doug Peterson's offense. I think Wentz is also going to benefit highly from remaining on the sideline. Now, what's interesting is if those of us who love the draft process, early on in mock drafts, Goff was a late to mid first round selection, and Wentz wasn't even in the first round discussion. So the fact these two young men skyrocketed up the draft boards to the top two picks just shows you the demand of NFL franchises to acquire a quarterback who can lead the team for the next decade, because the demand obviously far exceeds the supply. Probably neither of these two young men deserve to be picked first and second. They should have been mid to late first round, early second round picks, but the teams were desperate and they catapulted them up the boards.
Yep, I think that's exactly right, especially when you can find guys like, you know, your Dak Prescott's in the fourth round that looks like he could, you know, be just as good as either of those two at this point in their young careers. So switching gears and kind of switching out of the rookie talk, let's talk about a quarterback that has been in the league for a few years, but in a way it was almost like his rookie year last year because it was the first time he really got a ton of playing time. And that's Tyrod Taylor. You know, he just signed that contract extension in Buffalo. So, you know, with that new contract in place, where does he kind of fit in the dynasty landscape? In his first year as, you know, really getting the starting job, you know, he started 14 games last year, had a pretty good year, had, you know, 20 touchdowns and only 6 interceptions, you know, added, you know, over 500 yards on the ground and a couple touchdowns there. You know, the one big downside he had is, you know, he had 9 fumbles. Granted, he only lost one of them, so it didn't hurt that bad in fantasy. But still, overall, where do you kind of see him in dynasty? Because I like him quite a bit, but I don't know if I could even really, I don't know if I could put him in my top 10, because I think there's, you know, too many good quarterbacks ahead of him, even with his upside if all goes right.
Now, I'm actually looking on Fantasy Football Calculator now on the quarterbacks in Dynasty Leagues, and I have to do a double take here right now. I'm looking at the top 22 in Dynasty Drafts, and Tyrod Taylor isn't even in the top 22.
Wow.
I'm absolutely shocked. Now, I agree with you. He's not a top 10. But Tyrod Taylor at 6'1", 215 pounds, while he might be a little undersized for the NFL, he's not your prototypical quarterback. There are definitely traits that I like in this young man's game. He is also a dual threat runner. So you get statistics as a passer and a runner. Now, this is a kid who deserves to be on dynasty rosters. He should be drafted ahead of guys like Brock Osweiler. He should be drafted ahead of guys like Carson Wentz. He should be drafted ahead of guys like Paxton Lynch, in my opinion, because Tyrod has already shown us the ability to compete and be successful at the NFL level. Last year, he had 568 yards rushing and 4 touchdowns. Now, we remember how explosive and how much we are all in love with Colin Kaepernick after he led the 49ers to the Super Bowl. So there is always risk with these dual threat quarterbacks who haven't shown us over the long term that they can transition into pocket passers. But I do like Tyrod Taylor. I like the fact that he remained on the bench for 4 years. I like NFL players who have to overcome a little bit of adversity. He had to show determination and fortitude to remain on the Ravens roster and to become a starter in the NFL. I like that. I like the kid's makeup, and I like his ability to throw the deep ball. To me, Tyrod Taylor is a top 15 dynasty quarterback.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I like him quite a bit. I always have a little bit of a thing for those running quarterbacks. I like those extra fantasy points they pick up on the ground. So another guy that, you know, and as a rookie, you know, was one of the best dual threat quarterbacks in the league, that's RG3. And, you know, he hasn't looked bad in the preseason so far. He's actually shown, you know, a decent improvement, you know, standing in the pocket, making a couple throws, obviously led the team in rushing one game, so he's still got the wheels. You know, can RG3 become dynasty relevant again, or do you think he's just one of those guys that's going to have a tough time staying healthy, and it's just when he's going to be in, he's going to be decent, or where are you at on him?
You know, when I think of RG3, I kind of have a feeling I'm Marie Antoinette before the French Revolution. Just clueless about what to do and what to perceive, and don't really understand the boots on the ground in Paris. RG3, I loved him coming in the league. He was my second-ranked quarterback. I loved him at Baylor. He had such a fantastic first season under Mike Shanahan, and then everything fell apart. But I am a believer in Hugh Jackson, the new Browns coach. And I have to be impressed with RG3 and what he's done during the preseason and how he's looked on film. I do think he's dynasty relevant. I would still have him outside my top 20. I don't think I would take him ahead of like a Joe Flacco, but I would probably take him ahead of the guys like Carson Wentz, Paxton Lynch at this point. He's probably on par with like a Brock Osweiler. If you're looking for a third quarterback on your dynasty team, he still has lots of years left. There is injury concern because he kind of got wrecked when he was in Washington physically. But maybe the year sitting on the sideline, being able to reflect, grow as a young man, and be given a second chance under Hugh Jackson in Cleveland, I believe there's hope and potential here. I would not reach for RG3. I think at best he's your third quarterback on a dynasty team, but you have to put him on your radar and you have to consider him.
Yeah, I think that that's, you know, spot on, because if he does stay healthy, you know, we've seen that he can be a very good fantasy option. But like you mentioned, don't break the bank for him. So let's switch over to, you know, the running back position now. You know, just a position with even more storylines to follow. You know, we could spend, you know, 3 podcasts covering all of them. But we'll start off in Atlanta, and that's with Tevin Coleman. You know, early in the preseason, the reports were that he was going to have a bigger role. He hasn't really done a ton in the preseason. Do you think that he can carve out a role that makes him fantasy relevant in Atlanta, or do you think Devontae Freeman's just too good that he's just going to soak up, you know, 90% of the work and the fantasy points?
Now, if you look at the history of Kyle Shanahan, when he has been offensive coordinator, and we have a nice track record of Shanahan, he is going to have one lead back. He isn't a committee-type coordinator. He wants his running back to be a stud, to receive the vast majority of the carries, and he wants him to be a three-down back. I believe that Freeman is going to garner at least 80 to 85% of the touches in Atlanta. I believe he's that good of a ball carrier. I think Coleman will be on the field in situations where the Falcons have a big lead, or he might get some spot carries if for some reason Freeman just had like eight touches on a long drive and Atlanta gets the ball back quickly. I think Coleman's main role is as a handcuff to a Devontae Freeman owner. I don't think Coleman has a ton of fantasy relevance unless Freeman goes down in Shanahan's offense.
Yeah, that seems right to me. I mean, you look at Freeman, he does everything, and he hasn't slowed down at all, even in this preseason. He's a good player. He's going to finish as a top five running back this year if he can stay healthy. Moving over to Carolina, you know, is Cameron Artis Payne, you know, the rookie from last year, is he going to be the long-term running back there? Because I feel like whoever the starting running back is next to Cam Newton is going to have, you know, a top 10 at least upside in fantasy, because he garners so much attention himself that it's going to open up some lanes, because, you know, he can pass, he can run as well. So where are you at on Cameron Artis Payne long-term?
This is interesting because I think there were some teams like Carolina and Washington. During the draft, they bypassed running backs. And all of us draft Knicks, I think we're kind of shocked looking at the age and the depth charts in the backfield. But as I'm thinking about it more and I'm preparing for the college football season, I think Carolina and Washington saw the tremendous amount of talent in college football at the running back position. I believe there's going to be five first-round draft picks amongst running backs in the 2017 NFL draft. So the reason I bring this up, I think Carolina, Cameron Artis Payne, is their short-term answer for this season. I believe that the Panthers feel that they can get one more season out of Jonathan Stewart, and if they have to play Cameron Artis Payne for a couple games, they're okay with it. But I think after this year, the Panthers are looking at the draft board, and they're going to say, hey, we have an aging Stewart, and we have a young Cameron Artis Payne who is not good enough to carry the load. We're going to dip into that incredibly talented stable of college running backs and draft someone. So while I have Cameron Artis Payne on some season-long leagues, because I don't see Jonathan Stewart playing all 16 games, I don't see Cameron Artis Payne as a long-term dynasty solution.
Yeah, that's interesting. He's a guy that in, you know, a couple of the dynasty leagues I've played in, I've, you know, inquired about getting him because I do own Jonathan Stewart, and it seems like the owners that do have him value him higher than you do, because I've thrown up some pretty good offers and got shot down. So that's kind of interesting. So another guy that's, you know, coming into a sophomore season that was a major, major disappointment last year, that's Melvin Gordon. You know, maybe I shouldn't be too hard on him because he is a rookie, but, you know, he did average, you know, 3.5 yards per carry, 0 touchdowns on the ground or in the air. So where do you stand on him in Dynasty moving forward? Is it too harsh to kind of give up on him after one down year, or do you think that kind of showed some flaws in his game that could make it tough for him to translate to the NFL?
So to answer your questions one at a time, clearly Melvin Gordon still has dynasty value. I would rank him within the top 16, right on the edge of a number, no, right in the middle of a number two back. I cannot give up on his skill set after one season. While obviously it would have been great to see him show more potential as a rookie, we have to take into consideration how bad that Chargers offensive line was and how the passing game just fell apart as the season progressed, especially after Keenan Allen was injured. So I have hope for Melvin Gordon. His tape was good coming out of Wisconsin. I still believe he can be a productive NFL back. From dynasty perspective, he definitely is worth drafting. He would be an amazing third running back on any dynasty roster, but I would feel good with him as my second running back on a dynasty roster. I still believe Melvin Gordon can have a productive NFL career.
Yeah, that's good to hear, because I know there's a lot of dynasty owners out there that could be down on him after his rookie year, so that's good to know. You know, the message is maybe just hold tight, don't try and sell low on him, and just let him continue to develop. He should be in an offense that should put up, you know, quite a bit of points this year. So, you know, moving on to another one, a rookie from this year, you know, a guy that has, you know, multiple talents, that's Tyler Irvin out in Houston. I guess the big question here is, it looks like he's, you know, kind of got the return jobs on the kick and punt locked down. But a lot of people want him to turn into a guy that could be like a Gio Bernard PPR type running back. So where do you kind of see him fitting in there long term? Is he a guy that's just going to make his money on the special teams, or do you see him as, you know, a third down back with some PPR potential?
I definitely see him as a third down back with PPR potential. Pre-draft process, I had him ranked number 10 amongst my running backs. I do believe, you know, he's a little bit better runner than Theo Riddick. Actually, Theo Riddick's not a very good runner between the tackles. Mm-hmm. So Tyler Irvin is definitely a better runner than Theo Riddick between the tackles. I'm not sure if he's going to be in base offense as good of a runner as Giovanni Bernard. So he kind of falls in the middle of those two players as far as ball skills running between the tackles. But that means he's got the ability for 90 carries. But as far as a pass receiver, Tyler Irvin, I have him ranked amongst there with the Charles Sims and the Danny Woodheads. I think down the road, Tyler Irvin could be a very good PPR running back. The only problem right now, he has a relatively young man, Lamar Miller, in front of him. So it'll be interesting to see as the year progresses and during year two, how many snaps and targets does he get in that Texans offense.
All right, that makes sense. So we'll go move on to our second to last running back, and that's Jeremy Langford out in Chicago. You know, he put together a pretty impressive preseason game last week against the Patriots. Obviously, take it with a grain of salt. But do you think that he has the skills to become a top 10 running back in Dynasty?
The reason I do not think Langford is a top 10 Dynasty runner is because of head coach John Fox. When you look at John Fox and how he likes to employ his running backs between Carolina and Denver, and then even in Chicago last season, he likes to have a committee. John Fox would prefer like one running back gets 18 to 20 touches and another running back get between 8 and 12 touches. I just don't think that in the long run, Jeremy Langford is going to get enough touches on a per game basis in which would make him a top 10 dynasty running back. I think he's a top 20. I think he is undervalued right now because so many people had read Mike Clay's Pro Football Focus article on why Langford is not a very good running back. Now, there are things that I agree with. I just think he is a volume running back in a John Fox system. So I do think he is worth drafting, especially later. I mean, he's going criminally low sometimes in rounds 8 to 9. I think you scoff him up there. I just don't think he reaches the top 10 in dynasty leagues.
Yeah, I think that's all fair points. I think that he's a guy that if you have on your dynasty roster, you'd feel okay with him as a flex or even an RB2 in bye weeks. But I wouldn't want to go much higher on him at this point. But I do still like his prospects long term, so he's not a guy I'm cutting bait on by any means. So the last kind of running back situation we need to talk about, you know, had a little bit of news this week, you know, and that's Deion Lewis. You know, news comes out, he's having a knee surgery. We'll put him out for 8 to 10 weeks. He's probably going to start the season on the PUP. So a guy that you've been, you know, kind of mentioning for a while now, and that's James White. I think that he's absolutely a must-own player in PPR leagues and any league that Deion Lewis is owned. But what about Dynasty? Where are you at on him there? Do you think that he can maintain value after Lewis comes back, or what do you think about that?
Now, there's one thing over all these years that I've learned about Bill Belichick. If you try to guess the future, you are going to lose a lot of money in that New England backfield. Ever since Corey Dillon, the New England ball carriers have been massively in flux. I would have thought that New England would have drafted a running back this season. They didn't. Everyone was thought, well, if they didn't draft the running back, it must be because they have confidence in Deion Lewis that he's healthy. Well, he's not. We have an aging LeGarrette Blount. I believe he's 29. He has almost no value in PPR leagues. I can't, in a redraft, there's value in Blount, but not in dynasty leagues. I like James White. He's definitely worth having. Last year, I played him. My backfield, like many fantasy owners, were decimated by injuries. And one thing that I learned a lot last year is I had to open my mind to PPR running backs, especially playing on DraftKings and in PPR leagues.
Absolutely, yeah.
I was always looking for the bell cow. Early last year on DraftKings, I always was taking the Le'Veon Bells, the Jamal Charles, the Eddie Lacy's, and paying a lot of money. And I was having middling success. But I kept looking at the winning teams in my 50-50s and GPPs. And you know what I discovered? The owners who were putting Danny Woodhead, Giovanni Bernard, Deion Lewis, they would draft two of those guys, and they were winning all the money. I have to be open-minded, and I'm an educator, and I always want to learn. So I said to myself, I've got to think differently. And I started putting on guys like Deion Lewis and then James White, Jeremy Langford, Javorius Allen in Baltimore, and James White when Lewis went down. And guess what happened to my DFS rosters? Instead of finishing in the top 40% of 50-50s, they were finishing in the top 15 to 20%. I think James White has value. I don't care if he makes it 16 games or not. Let's say he plays the first 8 weeks of the season. I'm very happy with the PPR potential, just like Deion Lewis kicked ass last year for 6 games. I think it was 8 weeks. I forget exactly when he got hurt. Mm-hmm. And then I went elsewhere. I think James White this year has tremendous value in the first 4 weeks of the season, if not the first 8. Now, in dynasty leagues, I'm prop only if I got James White at extraordinarily cheap price or he was a waiver wire pickup, because banking on Bill Belichick to absolutely keep any running back for more than 2 years is just not a wise investment. And I also think we know that New England likes to acquire a wallet full of draft picks. I think New England will go into rounds 3 and 4 next year, and they're going to take 2 or 3 young running backs, because I'm telling you, my friend, I have never seen a running back pool this deep at the college level.
Hey, well, that's good to know. I mean, that puts a lot of, you know, the running backs in the NFL right now on notice if there's that many guys coming in next year that could take their jobs. I agree with you completely on the PPR running backs. Like, that's the thing that I really started to come around on last year as well. On my main dynasty team, you know, two of my main running backs last year I played down the stretch were Gio Bernard and Theo Riddick. You know, they just soaked up those passes and just racked up those points for me. But, you know, obviously in PPR leagues, you know, your bread and butter is going to be your wide receivers for the most part. So let's shift over there. Then we'll start off in Cleveland, and I kind of have two questions for you. What are you going to do with Josh Gordon? Because, you know, you hear the news coming out of camp that he looks good. Like the cornerbacks on the team there are saying, you know, he looks like the same guy, which is insane after how long he's been out. So what are you doing with him in a dynasty league? And also, is Terrell Pryor going to be a thing that happens this year? Because he's put together, you know, a couple nice plays in preseason. Obviously, they've been, you know, 1 and 2 catch games, so he hasn't been, you know, highly, highly involved. But, you know, he's looked pretty good out there. So I guess, you know, question two, is he going to be a thing there? Or is, you know, the other receivers on the depth chart going to keep him from really making that much of an impact?
Now, the Josh Gordon is such an interesting case study in dynasty picks, because right now I'm looking at the fantasy football calculator, and in dynasty leagues, Josh Gordon is going 19th off the board amongst wide receivers in the end of the second round. Now, I'm not willing to make that type of investment in this young man. I hope he has turned his life around. I don't think he's had the greatest sins that he has deserved the punishment that the NFL and Roger Goodell gave him.
Mm-hmm.
He's made some mistakes, but I made mistakes myself. But the problem is people are paying too much for him, and I'm not willing to pay that much. So I'm looking at the draft calculator and right now, and what I see behind him is I see guys like Laquon Treadwell, Kelvin Benjamin, Golden Tate. I'm seeing Sterling Shepard, Michael Floyd of the Cardinals. I'm looking at Dante Moncrief, and there's many more. But I'm much more interested in those other receivers than Gordon. Now, if I was a Dynasty League owner and I had Gordon on my roster, I would look to flip him right now, because here's the irony. He looks like a gilded prospect. Everyone wants the shiny new toy. And everyone thinks he's going to come out and light the NFL on fire. I don't think his value is ever going to be higher than it is right now. If I own Gordon, I would flip him. I would definitely try to get an asset that I can work and have value with right away. If I could flip Gordon for T.Y. Hilton, Gordon for Demaryius Thomas, Gordon for Brandon Cooks, I would flip those guys in a minute. I would much rather have them than Josh Gordon. And as far as Terrell Pryor, interesting. I have not really picked him up on any team yet this year. He's had flashes like this in the past. The Cleveland wide receiver core is deep. There's a lot of talent, a lot of young talent. I'm not convinced which one of those players is going to rise to the top right now. I think Pryor's in the conversation, but to me, he's a wait and watch. I've got to see how many targets he is actually going to get the opening week of the season against Philadelphia. Is he going to start, and is he going to receive 8 to 10 targets? I'm not convinced that he is worthy of being the alpha dog yet in Cleveland. And there are, between Corey Coleman and Josh Gordon and other players that the Browns like, I'm not sure where he's going to fall yet in the pecking order.
All right, that makes sense. The one thing, you know, with Pryor is, you know, he athletically, he's, you know, he's a freak. You know, he doesn't look like a quarterback or, you know, a former quarterback. He looks like, you know, he fits in right there as a wide receiver physically. But I do think that if Josh Gordon is, you know, 80% of what he used to be, that's going to be where most of the passing offense goes. And I don't think there's going to be a lot left over for Pryor, who at best is going to be third or fourth on the depth chart. You know, some other, you know, another important aspect of dynasty leagues is, you know, injuries. You know, you got to find a way to be able to differentiate between those injuries that, you know, you need to just sit on and wait on those guys, and those injuries that are going to, you know, be career changers. You know, and one of the overarching stories is that there's a lot of young wide receivers that have suffered injuries that, you know, made them, you know, miss, you know, full years. So, you know, what can we expect from guys, you know, like Kevin White, Kelvin Benjamin, Breshad Perriman? Do you see any of those guys really breaking out, or, and I guess in Benjamin's case, bouncing back? Or are these, you know, injuries that have kept them out for, you know, significant parts of their careers early, are those more worrisome to you, where you're kind of shying away from them in your dynasty leagues?
I would not shy away from Kevin White in a dynasty league. I had him ranked number 2 coming out of West Virginia. He has the physical abilities and the skill set to be a special player in Chicago. The only thing that would concern me is his John Fox offense, and the fact that they have Alshon Jeffrey. I'm just not sure if the Bears are going to be able to produce two fantasy studs that they can feed the football to Alshon and Kevin at the same time in one season, and with Jay Cutler at quarterback. But as far as being a NFL top-level prospect, I can't lower Kevin White because of 1 year he missed. I still consider him a top-level dynasty prospect. I think his upside could be 1,400 yards and 10 touchdowns. I love his long-term potential. Kelvin Benjamin, interesting. The thing that happened 2 years ago coming out, and I liked him coming out of Florida State very much, but the Panthers literally were bare at the wide receiver position, and he got force-fed targets and opportunities in Carolina. But since then, Carolina has actually upgraded that wide receiver core tremendously. You have a rising Devin Funchess, who is actually almost a carbon copy of Benjamin. I mean, the Panthers like to get these big, lengthy, strong guys with hands. And Cam Newton might not be the most accurate passer. So get these big guys with large wingspans who can pluck the football out of the air for you. So I'm not convinced that Kelvin Benjamin is going to get the amount of targets and opportunities he did before. They also have Ted Ginn. And everyone wants to beat up on Ted Ginn.
Yeah.
But you know what? The guy's going to start, and he has a role in this offense. Basically, they say, Ted, go deep. He runs two patterns, and if you see Cam Newton break the pocket, just run. Because guess what? With your speed and Cam's arm, we're going to throw it to you deep. So Ginn is going to be on the field, which limits, again, Kelvin Benjamin's touches. And at the end of the day, you still have Greg Olsen, who deserves his targets. So I'm not – while Kelvin Benjamin will be good, he'll have value, I don't see him getting the targets and the opportunities that he did 2 years ago. Now, my third highest rookie or draft prospect 2 years ago was Breshad Perriman. I loved him at South Florida. I thought he was a tremendous prospect. Obviously, he missed his freshman year. And he took a long time to get back on the field. While I believe he has dynasty value, right now what I see on that Ravens depth chart is I see a crowd. They have Kamar Aiken, who I still believe is the best player at wide receiver. They have an aging Steven Smith. I just don't know how much is left in the tank for Smith. And there's targets. They have a lot of tight ends. And we know that offensive coordinator uses his running backs, Mark Trestman, all the time. So I don't know how many targets Breshad Perriman is going to get. You have to keep dynasty value on him, but I think you have to remain patient, my friend.
That makes sense. I do actually own him on one dynasty squad right now, and I'm still holding him because, like you, I was very high on his potential coming into the league. You know, I think it presented a really nice buy low opportunity when, you know, it was mentioned that he was going to be out for the year. I moved quick and snagged him up, and I've been stashing him since. So, you know, with the news of him coming off the PUP this week, you know, that's what I've been waiting for what seems like an eternity now. But yeah, so let's shift on to, you know, this year's crop of rookie wide receivers. You know, this was, you know, pretty deep wide receiver class. You know, guys like Corey Coleman, Will Fuller, Josh Doctson, Laquon Treadwell, and Tyler Boyd. You know, some of these guys you'll see on a later segment in the show when we're talking about some of our favorite gems that are with a, you know, deep ADP. But how do you value and, I guess, and, you know, rank those, you know, big five rookie wide receivers for me this year in Dynasty?
So I'm going to rank them based on draft capital.
Okay.
Who I want to buy and where I want to buy them and how much I have to invest. So I still, my number one guy out of these four is going to be Tyler Boyd. He's still too cheap. The fantasy universe seems to be behind the boat on him. I don't know why he's not getting more press, even though amongst the experts and the Twitterverse, people are starting to catch on to Tyler Boyd, but he has a role, he has a veteran quarterback, and he has a stud in A.J. Green lining up across from him. I love Boyd's potential this year and moving forward. Then the second one, I have to, you know, when I'm wrong or maybe my evaluation is a little off, I have to think heavily about Will Fuller. He's been impressive. I worried about his hands coming out of Notre Dame. I was wondering if he was a little bit of a one-trick pony because he had so much speed and he loved the deep routes at Notre Dame. I was pretty convinced he was more of a body catcher than a hands catcher. But it looks like he's going to get the starting nod, and he's going to have targets and opportunities in this Texans offense. So Fuller is moving up my boards very quickly. Then I would still go Laquon Treadwell. You're going to have to pay a little bit more for him, but it looks like he's going to have a starting role in Minnesota. Obviously, Teddy Bridgewater is no one's favorite quarterback to be throwing the football, but I do think Treadwell will have opportunities. Corey Coleman, I love him, but he hasn't been getting on the field, and there's a lot of talent in Cleveland. So I wonder about what his short term is, but even though he has long-term potential. And until I see Doxson healthy, you know, I'm not sure if he's going to get many opportunities this year in Washington. They have a plethora of talent at the wide receiver, and they have veterans. I don't see him getting a ton of opportunities, maybe late in the season, but the injury reports are looking pretty bleak for Doxson.
Yeah, that makes sense. So I would rank those five in a little bit of a different order, but I think that, you know, everything you mentioned there is pretty close to spot on. Like, I would still have Treadwell as my top receiver out of this group for a dynasty league. I like his potential the best long term. I'm still, you know, not completely out on Bridgewater yet. I still think he could turn into a nice quarterback that could, you know, put up some fantasy relevant seasons for some of his receivers. I think I agree. Tyler Boyd would probably be my number two. Then I'd go Fuller, then Coleman, and then Doxson as well. All right, so that'll, you know, kind of wrap up our dynasty storylines that we had to talk about today. So let's shift over into, you know, some who you got in a dynasty version here. So, you know, all these guys we'll be talking about, we're talking about their dynasty value, you know, who we'd prefer. So we'll start off with, you know, some more running backs, and that's in Cincinnati, and that's Giovanni Bernard and Jeremy Hill. Who you got?
I'm still going Giovanni Bernard. I had him ranked number two amongst my running back prospects coming out of the 2013 draft. I love Giovanni Bernard. I love the fact that he's a dual threat player.
Yep, I agree with you there. Not a lot of argument for me. Giovanni Bernard is a guy I take as well, especially I play in mainly PPR leagues, and so he definitely gets the nod there. Moving on to Arizona, I feel like in a way this could be the competition for who's going to be the number one receiver this year, and that's Michael Floyd versus John Brown. Who you got?
I'm all in on Michael Floyd. I know that might not be the popular opinion. While I love John Brown, I think Michael Floyd is more likely to step into that Larry Fitzgerald mode. He has the body. He has the physical tools. I love Michael Floyd.
All right, I'm on the opposite side here. I'll take John Brown. I love this guy's potential. You know, he's a speedster. It's a little troubling. He hasn't been cleared for contact yet. That's, you know, starting to give me a little bit of worry for his availability or his production at the start of the year. But long term, I'll still take John Brown there. Another set of receivers. We got, you know, rookie Tajay Sharpe versus Rishard Matthews. Who you got?
I'm definitely going to go Tajay Sharpe. While I like Rishard Matthews, you know, he's probably a journeyman number two receiver in long term. I think Tajay Sharpe could be special. He's the young guy working with Marcus Mariota. I like Tajay Sharpe. Bank on him.
Yeah, I think Sharp's potential is sky high. I can't disagree with you much there. I do like Rishard Matthews. I think that he has a potential to be, like, you know, a nice number two or three fantasy receiver. So I'm not out on him completely, but long term in a dynasty league, definitely give me Sharp as well. Let's, you know, switch over to, you know, a position we've kind of neglected a little bit today, and that's the tight end position. You know, there's, you know, a trio of running backs that are, tight ends kind of mentioned in that top tier for dynasties with Gronk, but we're going to leave Gronk out of this one. We're going to go Tyler Eifert, Jordan Reed, Travis Kelce. Who you got out of those three, and how would you rank those three?
Great question. I'm going to be injury agnostic. My top guy is Jordan Reed. I just love the offense. I love his ability. He is a stud to me. Then I'm going to go Travis Kelce. I like him. He's a rock. He's not ever going to produce Gronk numbers, but he's on the field every week. And then I'm going to go Eifert. I'm just very worried. He's had injuries in the past. He's injured again starting the season. I'm going to have him third amongst my tight ends on this list.
All right, I'm going to switch up just a little bit there. I'm going to take Kelce first. I think that, you know, like you mentioned, he's just going to be rock solid for you. I could see him being a Jason Witten type that just lasts around forever and constantly puts up tight end, you know, top 10 tight end numbers. Number two, I'll go Jordan Reed. While, you know, the history of the concussions and everything is very, very scary with, you know, the way the NFL is kind of trending today with people, you know, taking, you know, a strong emphasis on those, you know, head injuries, I still like the upside there. I think he has the highest upside of any of those three here. But like I said, the injuries knock him down a little bit. And then, you know, continuing with the injury trend, Tyler Eifert got him at number three. Love the potential there. Still own him in a couple dynasty leagues. But injuries are scary there as well. So that's how I'll go. Kelce, Reed, Eifert. Moving on to some younger wide receivers. Let's go Farrell Cooper out in LA versus Chris Conley in Kansas City. Who you got?
Great question, but I'm going to go Chris Conley of the Chiefs. And why I'm going to say that is because at least I have stability at the coaching and the quarterback. I have Andy Reid and Alex Smith, and I would rather bank on them as from a fantasy perspective than Jeff Fisher and Case Keenum / Jared Goff. I'm going Chris Conley.
Yep, I'm with you there too. I think Conley has, you know, the potential to develop into a very nice red zone target there. Granted, you know, with Alex Smith there, it doesn't seem like the wide receivers generally get a lot of work, but I think that could change. I think Macklin is, you know, a top tier receiver, and I think Conley could develop into a nice number two. And then finally, we'll go one Jarvis Landry versus Devontae Parker. You know, a pair of young wide receivers out in Miami. Who you got there?
I'm going to take Jarvis Landry. I'm going to be a little conservative here. I know the role and the skill set of Landry. I know what he's probably going to do between, you know, 85 and 100 catches. I'm going with Landry, but I do believe Parker has a higher ceiling, lower floor, and much lower floor, but I'm going with Landry.
Yeah, I'd say in a vacuum, I would take Jarvis Landry, especially in a PPR league. But if you're just in a standard dynasty league, I do like Devontae Parker's upside more there. Definitely give Landry the big, big bump in PPR, though. So let's kind of move on to the last thing we really wanted to talk about. You know, when one of the things about dynasty leagues that I enjoy is generally how deep these leagues are. You know, I play in, you know, leagues that, you know, roster 25, 30, 40 players. So, you know, the deeper, the better, in my opinion, especially for dynasty. So let's talk about, you know, some dynasty potential gems right now that are going with an ADP of 100 or higher. And I'll start off just by kind of mentioning I got my ADP off of Fantasy Pros, and I did an average between Dynasty Trade Calculator and my Fantasy League just to kind of get a balance of the two. So, like, for example, on my Fantasy League, Theo Riddick's ADP was a 105, while on Trade Calculator, he was above 100, so I didn't include him. They both had to be outside of 100 to make my list. But I'll let you start with your number one guy. Go ahead.
My number one guy, and I'm using Fantasy Football Calculator, the Dynasty rankings, is Devin Funchess. He's at 105, ninth round, 11th pick. I love the upside of Funchess in this Carolina Panther offense. He has a good coach and a great young quarterback, and he is coming so much cheaper than Kelvin Benjamin. I love Funchess there.
Okay, my number one guy is also a young wide receiver we've kind of mentioned a little bit, and that for me is Laquon Treadwell. With the average of the two sites I'm using, he came out to an average of 116, so not very deep outside the 100, but definitely good value there. Like I mentioned, he's my top wide receiver in this rookie class, so I think getting him outside the top 100 is absolute great value there. So who's your number two?
Number two is wide receiver Marvin Jones of the Detroit Lions. I always liked him in Cincinnati. He scored 10 touchdowns in 2013. He is looking like a complete stud. He's the deep threat. He's got a good body, and he's only the 110th ranked player overall, and he's going to only cost you a 10th round pick. Marvin Jones of the Lions.
Yep, not to be boring here, Marvin Jones was my number two there. I think that's outstanding value. At times, he's looked like the best receiver there in Detroit. I don't think that's going to carry over all season, but I do think he's going to put up a nice year. So who you got at your number three?
I'm going to go a little deeper here at number three, and I'm surprised he's this far down the charts, but I'm going at number 130, Tampa Bay running back Charles Sims. He's being picked in the 12th round. He's only a sophomore. He's a dual threat player. He's got great hands, and he can run the football. I think he was the only player last year to get 500 yards rushing and receiving out of the backfield. I love Charles Sims at 130.
That's a very good pick there. I have a running back here as my number three as well, but I went a little bit, you know, considerably deeper there with an average of 186 ADP overall. That's a Buck Allen in Baltimore. You know, he's gone last of, you know, the running backs there in Baltimore, and I think that he's going to have a nice PPR season there. So where he's going in drafts, I think he's excellent, excellent value, and a guy you can feel confident as, you know, your running back four and a PPR running back five in a standard.
That's a good pick. He's not even on my board here. That was a good one. You got a good one.
All right. Let's go number four. Who you got there?
I'm going to go on the quarterback. And I know in dynasty leagues it's a little bit hard because, you know, once you have maybe your Andrew Luck or your Russell Wilson, you might not look for a second running back. But I'm shocked. Derek Carr of the Raiders at 148. 13th round, 06. I love the offensive line in Oakland. He's only a third-year quarterback. He's got a stud receiver in Amari Cooper. He's got a veteran in Michael Crabtree. I love Derek Carr at 148. I think that's a steal.
Yep. I had a quarterback as my number four guy as well. A little bit older, but a guy that I'm still buying in dynasty leagues. A lot of people are down on him. That's Matt Stafford. I think that he's going outside the top 100. I think he has an average of 130. Which is an excellent, excellent value, but I do think that he has the potential to finish as maybe the top quarterback outside of the, you know, your big four, that maybe, you know, top five quarterback. I think that he has potential there. I think they're going to be more balanced this year, and I think that the lot of their run game is going to be by extension of short little dump-off passes to Theo Riddick and Amir Abdullah. So I like Matt Stafford still in dynasty. Only 28 years old, so still has plenty of time to grow. You know, you look at guys like Phillip Rivers, who didn't like really, really develop till later in their career. I think that he's another candidate for a guy like that. So I got Matt Stafford as my number four. So to round it off with your fifth and final gem, who you got?
I was shocked that he's this far down the list. And I'm looking, I had to do a double take. But Doug Baldwin of the Seahawks is the 143rd wow. player going off the board in the 13th round. I mean, look, he's probably not going to replicate 14 touchdowns. I understand that. But he's still going to garner over 100 targets. He's very productive. His efficiency on a per-touch basis is off the charts. He's got a great coach and an ascending young quarterback. I can't believe Doug Baldwin is there at 143.
Yeah, I missed him. He should have been on my list as well. So that would have probably been my number five if I would have mentioned that. But we'll go ahead and go with the guy that I had picked there. And that's a guy way, way deep at 191. And I know you don't – it's not good to overreact to preseason. But what I've seen from him so far has – made me lead me to believe that I think he still has something in the tank, and that's Alfred Morris. A little bit of a contrarian pick there. Obviously, Ezekiel Elliott is the long-term answer there. He's going to be the guy. But I'm starting to get a little nervous about the fact we still haven't seen him. I know the Cowboys are trying to downplay it, but it still makes me nervous with the rookie running back not getting any reps in the preseason. Hopefully, we see him this week, and you know he looks pretty good, and that could drop it. But as of now, I have Alfred Morris there. You know, going at 208 on MFL, and on the trade calculator, I have him at 148. I think that he's still a sleeper to, you know, put up 6 to 7 touchdowns this year, and I think that he could, you know, carve out a decent role. Some of the beat writers around Dallas have even mentioned the fact that Morris could start at some points this year because they're not sure what they're going to get out of Zeke. So I think Morris that deep in the draft is, you know, pretty good of value there.
Couldn't agree with you more. Every team that I've drafted Ezekiel Elliott in so far, and I think out of my 18 drafts, I've had a Zeke on about 6 of them because I love Zeke. I have either acquired Darren McFadden or Alfred Morris, and I've cut McFadden and picked up Morris because I do think he's carved out a role during this preseason and training camp process.
Yeah, absolutely. He's looked good. He's shown great patience. He's pretty good burst, like a burst that I haven't really seen since his first and second years in Washington. He looks rejuvenated. Looks like he's playing with a chip on his shoulder. So that kind of wraps up our dynasty talk for today. So, you know, what do you have coming up at Football Diehards? What can people check out over there?
There's just so much. We're getting ready for the DFS season. There will be lots of podcasts. I'm doing a first ever. It's called the DFS Dudes, Hollow with the Scala and Chill with the Big Chi. One of my good friends, Chris Chion. It is going to be available every Thursday during the NFL season. It is going to be catered to DraftKings fans, but you'll also get information for any of the other DFS sites that you want. Please join, give us a listen. And, you know, there's just fantasy goodness every day on the footballdiehards.com. And please join a college fantasy football season-long league. I guarantee you will not regret it. Go to Fantrax.com. You will love it, everyone.
Awesome. So a couple things I got coming up. You know, like I said, if you're a basketball fan, obviously check out, you know, my DynastyBball.com podcast. I'm working on my Dynasty Top 250 rankings right now. So those I'm hoping to have out in the next week or so. They're going to be extremely, extremely comprehensive. I'm going to write out a little blurb on probably each on all 250 players. You know, basketball fans, check out the Locked On Basketball podcast with Josh Lloyd. Baseball fans, make sure you get the Red Rock Fantasy Baseball podcast. Leave us a review on iTunes if you're enjoying our content. I feel like we're kind of starting to hit our stride, starting to improve with each show at this point. So we'd love, you know, some tips and suggestions on how we can continue to improve and, you know, get more listens from you guys. So I guess if that wraps it up for you, I guess we'll get out of here, John.
Excellent. Have a great day, everyone, and can't wait for kickoff.
Yes, absolutely. We'll talk to you guys next week.